every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM. Because business matters.
My name's Stephen Hyde. I'm a professor of management practice here, and as always stress, not an academic, but from the business world. Some of these guys that I've been with this morning, so I won't bore them with my background, but it's a business background rather than an academic background. And we're very, very lucky this week to have the one and only Miguel Viana?
Viana.
Who actually normally comes along, and one of his jobs is working for Radiolab, which he can tell you more about. And he comes along and records these sessions, and we do put them on podcasts and so on. But every session we've done, Miguel always pipes up with some comment which is in connection with Elon Musk. Elon Musk did this and he did that. Whatever topic we're covering, he's got an angle. So I thought, this is too good to miss. We need to do a session on the man himself, and who better to get to help us with that than Miguel. So without further ado, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, Miguel, and then we'll do a quick sort of a very potted biography of Elon Musk, and then start sharing a few thoughts, and then please do just ask questions or contribute as you see fit.
Yep, so I'm a third year student here in university. I'm doing media production, and most of you probably ask, well, why am I even interested in a business man? Well, the main reason is because I'm a very, very, very big tech enthusiast. I really, really like technology. I've always done ever since I was little, and it's just this man has the whole title of this session is he's a visionary, and visionaries are the kind of people that I like. And it's just something that really, really speaks to me as a person, and his views as well. So that's the main reason why I'd like him.
That's great. The very fact that he's captured his imagination and it comes up week in, week out in our sessions it is great. And it prompted me. I must admit, I knew very little about Elon Musk, not much more than his name and one or two of the companies he's been involved with. But as you saw, I now have his biography on that table there, and I'm ploughing through it. But incidentally, that was recommended to me by another colleague, and it is an interesting read if you get the chance. But should we just do a quick, for those, how many of you actually are particularly familiar with him and his background? You are. So some are, some aren't. So why don't we just do a quick sort of run through of his main achievements, if you like, where he's got to.
If you wanted to go through his achievements, he's actually been involved in quite a few companies. Some of them are well known, others are not so much. He's actually started off, if you want to go chronologically, he as a child he was very interested in technology. He was a bit put aside from his schoolmate, by his schoolmates because of how smart he was and the kind of topics that he was interested in. And
He was born in South Africa, for those who don't know.
And his mother was a model, his dad was an engineer, and you were saying something about his grandfather as well?
Yeah, from the extensive research I've done in that book there, I can say that his mother's ancestors, particularly her father, was quite an adventurer. He and his wife would flying in a sort of two-seater aeroplane back in the 1950s, 1960s, 10,000, 20,000 mile journeys from sort of South Africa to Australia via Asia and everything like that, and quite often some quite hairy incidents along the way. So quite a sort of fearless character, I think.
So yeah, he in at a very young age, during his, I think it was when he was a teenager, he developed his first computer game after actually...
He was 12.
After he surpassed his own IT teacher, he thought, I'm a tiny bit better than my own teacher, so I'm going to make my own game. And I think he sold it for around $500, around that, but for a 12-year-old to make a $500 game, it's quite good. So as he grew older, he moved to America. He graduated in the University of Pennsylvania, And after graduating, he moved to California, where he started his own ventures. He firstly began with a small, I think it was an e-newspaper kind of website that allowed people to view publications from the website directly. And the funny,
just to be clear, he was born in 1971, so to help get on that. So I guess it was about 1991, 92 or something.
So, yeah, it was around the dot-com bubble, actually. And he created that company, and actually the server had to be run by the same computer that he coded in. So in the morning and in the rest of the day, the server was always running and had to be maintained. And then at night, he would spend entire nights just coding his next project or fixing whatever was wrong with the website. And from that, from that investment that he did every night, he sold this e-newspaper company and started coming up with his new project, which would actually in the future become PayPal. Most of you probably know what PayPal is. Very, very, very large corporation. And it was actually invented by Elon Musk himself, and he later sold it to eBay for, I don't know exactly how much, but it was an exorbitant amount of money that allowed him to start his...
300 million, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think his share was like 150.
Yeah. So it was his brainchild. He sold it to eBay, and then as he started to, well, but got his own, share and everything, he started to get his own investments back. He heavily invested in a company called Tesla, which most people think he founded. He didn't actually found the company. He just invested on it heavily, so much that the original founders of the company decided to make him CEO. So today, Tesla's been in the news a lot. It's a company that had its ups and downs. Which
everyone
can...
familiar with?
So
Tesla and what Tesla?
So what Tesla does, their main focus point is electrical vehicles. So their first model was the Tesla Roadster, which actually featured in Top Gear, if anyone's interested in that kind of show. Got a bit ridiculized for no reason and actually ended up in a lawsuit against the BBC by Elon Musk. But oh well. And it had its flaws, it had its advantages, but it was Tesla's first endeavor into the electrical vehicle market. So I guess it was a good try. And after that, then came the actual first great model, which was the Model S. Model S was very, very, very popular within wealthy people, since it was a $90,000 car. But what it did, and this is where Tesla and what Elon has always been very, very focused about, is that not only were the cars very efficient, so they were by miles one of the best electrical cars around, they were also extremely well designed. They were beautiful. Well, it's up to everyone's everyone's decision if you find the cars beautiful or not. It's a subjective topic, but most people agree that Teslas are very, very well built, and not just pretty, but also safe. So they've actually earned a 5-star zero NCAP rating in terms of crashing, and you don't have to worry about having an engine at the front. So you have two boots. You've got one in the back, one in the front. So it's an incredibly versatile vehicle. And then after that came the Model X, which was an SUV. And I'm just going on about Tesla now, these are the two main vehicles.
Because we'll come back to, we'll do a couple of other companies in a minute, and then we'll draw it back to the sort of the visionary side of things. So electric vehicles, obviously not using fossil fuels or whatever, with all the challenges of electric vehicles, how do you recharge them and all of that sort of thing. But looking to break down the barriers of doing that and developing new ways of doing things.
Yeah.
So the second company I want to bring up is SpaceX.
Yeah. So SpaceX is a space exploration company, comes from the actual name. And it comes from his visionary visions when he was a child of actually making a difference for the world. So what he developed with SpaceX were ways to, so that in the beginning he actually came up with ways to transport goods from Earth to the International Space Station. He actually has a contract with the International Space Station for, I think it was about 2 years, last time I checked, something like that.
Yeah.
So he builds and supplies all the infrastructures that get to the International Space Station to deliver all the goods.
And I think that's was certainly the first, it might still be the only private company that has such a contract. Otherwise, it's like the Russian government or the US government or whatever that's doing that.
Obviously, heavily funded by the American government as well. But yeah, what his visionary part of SpaceX is, he has what the idea that some people call crazy, other people call genius, and I'll keep it up for you guys to debate. He wants to put people in Mars, most likely on a one-way trip, which for the first people who actually go on that voyage, it'll be quite interesting. But what he hopes to build is some sort of infrastructure that allows humans to actually go to Mars and start populating it if this world ever goes to the, you know, ever goes under, which with the current what should we say, with the current government that is around the world right now isn't very looking very good anyway. So yeah, that's his future endeavor, space endeavors that he's doing with SpaceX.
And it's doing quite sort of revolutionary stuff there. So it's got this massive sort of factory warehouse in California that is making from real basic components the rockets and everything that go up there. But even designing with some of those, it's very innovative ways of doing things. So the actual sort of capsules that the astronauts go in are actually quite stylish compared to those sort of horribly cramped sort of cones that you see
Apollo 11,
Apollo 11 or whatever going up in. So it's sort of solving a problem, but also doing it in a sort of stylish way rather than just a functional way. Okay, and then so he's sort of basically running those two companies simultaneously. And the third company he's involved in, but I don't think he's actually running, is Solar City.
So Solar City was actually his brother's idea. He, as Elon started investing into Tesla, his brother actually started developing Solar City, which is, as the name states, it's a solar panel, solar-driven company that they try to bring down the costs and the distribution and build of solar panels, and they're actually quite good. They've been doing quite well. They get a lot of investment from Elon Musk himself, and recently, I think it was about a year ago, not that much, Solar City and Tesla merged together. And the reason why they merged together was because of the solar tile design that Solar City developed in conjunction with Tesla. So before we actually go into the solar tiles, there's the main power bank that we need to talk about, the Powerwall. So another product that...
I'm just going to pause you for a second.
Yeah.
Because I know we're going along quite quickly. Any sort of questions, thoughts, etc.? As we rush on, do just raise your hand or chip in. There's one over there. Yeah.
I'm very much interested in these cars using batteries that Tesla produced. If you look at the future of petroleum products, I come from a country that will produce oil and gas. The future of oil and gas is quite dicey as it is now. I've seen some battery cars here. But the cost is always the challenge. And you said they produce as $90,000.
The first Tesla.
That would be the second Tesla Model S. Yeah.
So that's the cheapest you can get a battery car?
No, it's not actually. You could get them for a bit cheaper, and we still haven't gotten to the next model, which is
I think it was a car for mass production which was worth 35,000.
Which is the Model 3. I haven't actually gotten to that one yet, because it would be... It actually came along the same time as the solar cells, but all of these products actually connect together. They
But your point really is it a mass market product, or is it a luxury product?
Yeah. Or is it produced for a particular segment of customers?
You're listening to Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM. In the beginning, yes. The problem about creating a company like this is that obviously there's costs involved with manufacturing a car of this caliber. You could take a look at, for example, companies like we were talking about Apple. They have a very similar marketing strategy for this, which is first they have to get to the wealth and wealthy and rich people in a way to how should I say this, spark interest in the rest of the world. So Tesla, although actually Elon Musk pays himself $1 every year, that's a salary from Tesla, so he doesn't get a lot of profit. Tesla, although it is a company, it obviously has to make profit in order to survive, in order to strive. Their main goal isn't to make money. Elon already said that he's not interested in creating a fortune out of Tesla. What he wants to do, and this is his core idea for everything that he creates, he wants to change the world. And unfortunately, a project this big isn't easy to change the world in one go. You need to build it. You need to create something. You need to create the infrastructures necessary to actually develop such a big project. So the first car, the Roadster, was a bit quirky. It was pretty, but also very quirky. The Model S edged out everything. And yes, it is guided towards a very high tier part of the population in the world, but it has been popular. It has sold a lot of models. You actually see them here in the UK. Some, if you go on, yeah, you can still see them around here. Obviously, in America, they're more popular than here, but they're quite expensive for normal people. But what the next endeavor that Tesla's trying to create, well, they've already created, they're now just producing it, is the Model 3. Then Model 3 is the realization of what Musk wanted to do, which was a common everyday car for the common everyday man. Mm-hmm. And you've had many, many other, well, I wouldn't say many, but quite a few other companies that tried to do this. You've got, for example, in London, a lot of, if you think electrical car, the first thing that comes to your head, if in my opinion, would be the G-Wiz. If anyone knows what the G-Wiz is, it's a very, very, very small car. And it's not very efficient. It's absolutely horrendous, in my opinion. And sometimes, if you're on a rainy night, you have to choose between having wipers or lights. So, very, very, very flawed car. Now, for London, I guess it kind of works, you know, but you're always going to be going from point A to point B very, very short distances. You can argue that you don't need to drive in style, in my opinion. I think everyone should have that choice. But yeah, G-Wiz was, in my opinion, a half-measured way of dealing with the problem. And then you've got hybrids, Toyota Priuses. You've got them all over, just in Luton. I would say 70% of taxis here in Luton are Toyota Priuses. For one reason, not only do they run on petrol or diesel, they also have electrical engines, electrical motors that make the car very sustainable. But you're still using fossil fuels, which is something that Tesla doesn't want to do. In my opinion, again, none of these alternatives are beautiful. As a matter of fact, if I could name a car that is almost as beautiful as Tesla's are, it would probably be the BMW i8. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that car. It's absolutely beautiful, but again, has a small petrol engine to actually fuel up the batteries. So with the i8, if it runs out of batteries, you always have the petrol engine to help you power the car. It doesn't actually power the wheels, it just powers the engine. It's like a generator. So yes, it is guided towards a very, very, you know, rich part of the world. But yeah.
But the point is, the point you're making is it ever going to sort of like take over the world or whatever? Well, do you know roughly when it was he introduced the first Tesla was?
I think it was around 2006, 2005. So that's the Roadster.
So
yeah. Tesla's 2003.
The Roadster.
Yeah, it's 2003.
So I'm probably mixing it up with the Model S then.
So anyway,
yeah.
So sort of 13, 14 years or something to change the world is quite a short sort of period. And it sounds like they're launching a sort of much more affordable vehicle. Now, of course, the vehicle, it's not just about launching a vehicle. There's two things which we can touch on is how do you sell them to consumers? So what's the sales network, come back to that, and then secondly the whole issue of charging the batteries or the power walls, so that they can keep on going once you've initially bought them. So the first point, the whole car industry, if you take the UK and to probably a greater extent the US, is run by Ford and General Motors, and with one or two other significant players, and it's all about dealerships. You buy a car from a particular dealership. You can't just buy it. You can in the UK find one or two car supermarkets, but they're very, very rare. Effectively, you just buy a car from a Vauxhall dealership or a Ford dealership or whatever it is. I've yet to see a Tesla dealership because I think that's not the way they want to play it. So not only is there a technological challenge of creating an electric car that sort of works and is acceptable and is desirable, there's actually the whole sort of distribution challenge, if you like. This comes back to businesses in general. How do you get the products from the factory to the final customer?
So yeah, that is the main challenge with.
And that's going to be the interesting thing over the next few years, because in America they're sort of trying to sell them in shopping malls, is that right?
Yeah, and they've actually done that here in the UK as well. I think it's either in London that they have an actual Tesla shop. It's not a dealership. It's just a shop. They've got cars there, and you can order yours from there, and you can actually see them. And the problem about this is that it breaks the standard practices of selling a car. Usually selling a car means that you need to put it on a dealership, pay for the dealership itself. This just cuts out the middleman. You don't need an entire dealership to sell a car. Why not just use them all to do it? And in America, this has been very criticized because, well, since some states, namely Texas, are very oil-driven, so they try furiously to pass bills that will, you know, hinder the sale of Teslas or any other electrical vehicles for that matter, and that is the main issue about creating such a project, and if we actually go back a little bit in time, back in the I think it was the 90s, California actually had a bill that required car manufacturers to create a zero emission vehicle. General Motors took that goal, I guess, and decided to create the EV1. Now, for most people, this doesn't ring any bells because it actually wasn't that ugly. It wasn't that expensive. It had a lot of tax rebates, just like Tesla's today. But right before, I think it was a couple of months after they were put on sale, General Motors recalled all of them and destroyed them, because due to lobbyism and, you know, just the massively oil-driven infrastructure of America, they kind of loosened up the grip on the bill and just forgot about it. So all the cars are destroyed because oil companies are absolutely frightened that something like this takes off, because when it does, the normal petrol powered car is old news. Who wants an ancient machine like that? I say this as a petrol head. I absolutely love cars, and I'd really like to have a Tesla or an i8 or anything like that. It's not only selling to the public, it's also letting governments and, you know, companies that have been around, you know, business practices that have been around for ages, to look at this and go, okay, this is probably a good thing. We need to reinvent ourselves. And we'll just have to see what happens along the next few years.
Okay.
You're listening to Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM.
So, not surprisingly, it's focused mainly on Tesla so far, but I just want to bring back to the individual himself. And this, and I don't think it's a sort of like a created myth, if you like, that Musk has got this sort of big ideas, you know, let's populate Mars. You know, it's not like, let's see if we can get some industrial pumps into China. This is big stuff. You know, hard enough getting pumps into China, but you know, this is on a different scale. Or let's completely change the reliance or remove the reliance for transportation on oil and gas to a much more efficient energy base. So I'm trying to think, maybe, I don't know if you guys have got any ideas, other sort of entrepreneurs, if you like, who've sort of really gone down this sort of very sort of visionary route, rather than saying, how can I make lots of money? And maybe he started off a little bit along that way, you know, with that. I mean, PayPal was sort of quite revolutionary, but it wasn't visionary, I don't think. So he made his money there, really, and then moving on from there. Any thoughts on anyone you're aware of as a entrepreneur or serious business person who's had sort of completely over the top ideas that they've tried to put into practice? No. That's what, I mean, I can't immediately think of any either. So, it's, so when I said one of the.
Uber.
Uber. Right. I'm not sure that's revolutionary enough, really, is it?
I think it is.
You think it is?
Yeah.
Well, why? Tell me why.
Because it's just changing everything, how people perceive the market of getting a taxi. And also it's also like a disruptor in the business.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of getting along from the traditional way of just ordering a taxi and waiting for the talk with the company. And also because for Uber, basically it allows for simple people to be simple drivers to be to kind of take the people from one place to another. They don't need any like certificate. For example, in America, they need I know that it's like 1 million. It's like a symbol that they have to gain in order to be like a
License.
Yeah.
Taxi
and
driver.
In UK, you have to have 3 years like a course or like study 3 years in order to.
I don't think it's 3 years, but I think there's some sort of thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
3 years, yeah.
And kind of they remove all of that.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. Uber was a completely visionary idea into a fairly, I would say, very, very, very old structure, which was the taxi business. Everywhere around the world, you've got taxis. I mean, if you're going to talk about driverless cars, you have to think of taxis first. But it's the thing about Uber is that most countries and most governments had an uproar about that. Especially France, if you remember that. The problem about that, about not having any certificates or any sort of checks, is that who knows what might happen with an Uber driver. And that's something they had to tackle themselves. And don't get me wrong, I use Uber as well, and I really like it. It's really, really helpful, really useful. But in my opinion, some checks have to be made. Some background checks need to be taken in order to people to have feel safe while in an Uber.
That's not true. Yeah, there should be some regulation about this, but taking consideration that the back seats of the car, there are 90% empty, so nobody's using them.
Yes, so
you
it's
can
actually
use the cars.
It's saving energy
potential.
And it's, you know, obviously it's helping the environment by doing that.
Yeah,
true. But to be fair, most of these people, most of these Uber drivers wouldn't be driving if they weren't paid, would they? They wouldn't do it for free. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure how revolutionary it is. I was in South Africa last week and driving along roads in the, we had a hire car, we were driving along roads, and you would have people sort of not quite hitching a ride, like hitchhiking, but they would be holding out notes of money. Yeah? So basically what they're saying is, I'll pay you, I don't know, R100 or whatever the amount was, to take me from here to the next city, or something like that. To me, that's exactly the same as Uber.
Just a different infrastructure.
Except I'm not using a phone to find them.
And Uber is a bit safer in taking consideration this, because the people who are using it, they're using payments with card. So if something happened, you have the details of that person.
So
you have
and their customer service is very, very good. I've tried it on myself.
Yeah.
They're
so
very, very much on top of it. But at the same time, I don't think any of the approaches are the correct one. So you've got two businesses here. You've got the taxi business, doesn't matter what country you're on.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the taxi business and then you've got Uber. So taxis are a bit ancient. They've been around. Some people obviously need them to actually carry out their everyday lives. And then Uber comes around and does it better. What I think, something that should be met between the two infrastructures, is that both Uber and taxi companies need to play along. So they're just going to be fighting with each other constantly instead of working together. So what I think is they're both doing the same thing. Now, Uber isn't a taxi company. Uber doesn't, you know, they don't provide cars. They don't do anything like that. They're just a pair of a group of, I'm
like
simplifying it.
Like a broker, aren't they?
Yeah. They're just a program that, not a computer program, but
connector.
Yeah, exactly. Something that tells people to do this and we'll connect you to this people. To these people, and essentially taxis do the same, but they're run by a company, so they get cars that are given by the company, and all the checks are taken by the company, undertaken by the company. But what I think should be done would be a coalition between the two. So Ubers that, you know, I wouldn't say be run by companies, but Ubers that have had the same checks as taxis, and taxis that have the same technology as Uber's. So you have other companies like Lyft or I can't remember any others but on the top of my head, but you've got companies that do the same thing. But what I think is, it's not Uber that needs to reinvent themselves because they're here. They've arrived and they're very successful and popular. What I think needs to reinvent itself are the taxi companies themselves.
Okay, but tell me back from that. Go back to the point about visionary. I'm not sure who the guy is or was who sort of kicked off Uber, but what was it? Was there a vision in there? Was that about using these empty back seats, if you like?
Yeah, that was the vision. In order for to not have so many cars, it's like when you in order for normal now, taxi company will buy cars, so more cars on the road, but Uber, what they're doing, they're just using the cars that are already there. They don't have to provide any more cars. They just use what they have right now.
Yep.
So I think that's a vision.
And they have
it's
a
the
very
same for Airbnb. I'm not sure if you heard of Airbnb.
Yeah.
They are doing kind of the same, replacing the normal hotels, motels with just people's homes.
Mm-hmm. That's true, yeah. But again, there's always that, not just the safety aspect of it, because you probably already heard about a couple of scandals that happened with Airbnb. Some of them were drug plants.
Yeah, but
others.
Then there are scandals for Tesla Model S as well with the sensor. And the drivers who were killed, and there are scandals.
The thing is about the if we're going to talk about the self-driving Teslas and everything, they're not actually self-driving. It's just an aid much like ABS
yes,
or ASC or something.
In China, they were promoted as self-driving before that businessman was killed, and after that, they kind of changed the whole advertising thing and promoted it as car assisted.
It's a driving aid. It's
yeah.
But that's the thing. It's even before that, it was a driving aid. Tesla never aimed for a self-driving car. That was Google. Google is still doing that, and they're still trying to do it.
Elon Musk, actually, he in his statements on Twitter, he said that he wants a driverless car, and he said that from the beginning. So he aimed at that from the beginning.
I personally, I didn't really see much about self-driving Teslas. I've heard about Teslas that are aware, and most Teslas have this system in place, which is Teslas are aware of their surroundings, so they know when to switch lanes. You don't need to actually use the wheel, you don't need to use the pedals. But if, and this is the security that's in the security measure that's in place, is that if the seat of any Tesla feels that it's been, so if you do this on a Tesla,
mm-hmm.
if you lift yourself off the seat, the driverless mode will disengage. Because you're supposed to be paying attention on to the road.
Yeah, that's new. But before that, in 2016, I think it was the problem with Model S. They didn't have all those things before Joshua Brown was killed in the accident. So it was an accident. He was kind of activating the autopilot mode, and he was doing something else. And the car didn't see another car in front, which was like a white big car in front or something like that. And the sensor of the Tesla didn't see that. So it just crashed and the driver died.
Yeah.
And after that, they activated all the other sensors. But before that, they didn't.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's good. But all I want to do is come back to, you know, we talked about Uber, we talked about Musk. So when we come to this sort of visionary thing, it sort of feels like that the Uber thing is sort of ecologically energy driven, if you like, to reduce fuel usage, if you like. Tesla is clearly along those lines. SpaceX, very different. It's almost like a sort of safety belt. You know, where can we find somewhere to escape to
Plan B
all goes pear shaped
yeah.
on Earth. You know, Solar City is obviously energy linked. Do you think all this visionary stuff has to be about, is it always with that sort of topic in mind, about energy and, inverted commas, saving the planet? You know, it's funny that none of us have brought up, including myself, any sort of visionary innovations in the context of health or, healthcare is a good example, or education or, you know, big topics like that, social care. Maybe there is some stuff going on with somebody somewhere, but that's sort of revolutionary, that's taking something to a different level. But do you think there's a particular reason for that, or is it simply that cars and transport and whatever are so visible and so obvious in terms of causing pollution and so on, that it's sort of like an easier, more obvious target to go for?
You're listening to Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM. Well, not just that, but transportation. Well, the main point of Tesla and SpaceX and everything like that, it would be transportation, whether it be space or just roads. That's their main point. But when you said something about health, being a visionary in health is very, very more. It's much more difficult than being a visionary in the energy or the transportation business, in my opinion. It has so many other caveats. There's so many other things that you have to think about. Not saying that you don't have to think about things in the transportation business, but when you start dealing with, you know, general well-being of not just humans, there's a lot of things that you have to think of. So having a breakthrough in health or science is quite a bit more difficult than in transportation, in my opinion. Because you can have...
And monetizing it, I suppose.
Yeah,
you know, if you
definitely.
You have to specify monetizing in this sector, at least. I mean, when you talk about a breakthrough, you always have to specify monetize, regardless of the industry.
Yeah. I think that's right, and that's always a difficult one with health.
So I would say with health, you can definitely have breakthroughs, but it's also the fact that the health, when you start a company, for example, a car company, it's not necessarily government-owned, but pretty much the entire health system in every country is government-owned, right? So
well, to an extent, yeah.
To an extent, yes. So this is where the private companies come through, which do a much better service. Although they shouldn't really be there, because the government should do a better job in that.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because in pharmaceuticals, the companies are private companies. They get subsidized to a greater or lesser extent from governments in terms of developing new drugs and all of that sort of stuff. I'm guessing, yeah, I think none of us are particular experts in this, but in healthcare it tends to be small steps, you know, incremental improvements in care, you know, so if you go back 30 or 40 years, you know, the first ever heart transplant, you know, transplanting organs was never thought of, I don't know, 50 or so years ago. Now it's commonplace. You know, artificial limbs are significantly better for people than they were again sort of 30, 40, 50 years ago, and so on. But it's been incremental, hasn't it, I guess?
I mean,
rather than completely revolutionary.
Right, from this particular point of view, I'd say they had the, like, massive improvements in the health sector as well, like being with the processes or with the mechanical limbs, if you may. They can 3D print them right now. Even with the organs, they try to 3D print organs so they can replace the unhealthy ones.
Yeah.
And even in if you suffer like burns, they want to create a synthetic skin.
Yeah.
And actually put it on the damaged area.
Yeah.
And it will be scar proof for you, so you don't have scars because of that. It will merge with your body. If you
sure, sure.
So there are many others besides those are like the ones I read about anyway. But there are many others breakthrough that are being published every day. But
yeah,
I would say for a human person to read even 50% of them, you wouldn't have the time in a human life to read all the discoveries that are being made.
No.
Or the patients, right. Most people simply with the thing about a physical product and something that you can sell is that there's a certain desirable aspect to it. You want to have it.
Yeah.
Now, if your body's perfectly fine, you're not going to want
exactly
a prosthetic hand
or at least know about it.
Yeah, exactly. You could know about it, but you're not going to research onto
exactly
it unless
yeah
it affects you or someone that you love. And that is why I think the selling point of medical breakthroughs.
That's why I said you have to specify monetization.
Exactly, exactly. Well, we've had breakthroughs. If you were talking about the prosthetic limbs, we had breakthroughs in legs that are actually capable of mimicking the not I wouldn't say the human feel, but the way they work.
Yeah.
I remember there was a man who lost his legs in climbing, rock climbing, and he lost both of his legs. And instead of grieving and just giving up on it, he started a company that specialized in building prosthetic limbs
yeah
that actually mimicked the way human legs work a lot. So currently he was the guinea pig for it. He wasn't the actual person to develop them. He got people to develop it for him, but he was the main investor for it. And that's an example of a medical breakthrough. But
yeah, because
it's
they connect the machinery with the human body, like. So the electrical impulses from the brain
exactly
goes straight to the machine.
They can use whatever left of the nerves on say the knees or the leg
yeah
are, and then just connect it with the actual prosthetic leg, which in itself is an amazing breakthrough. People wouldn't that this is starting to seep into the realm of science fiction.
Yeah.
We're starting to get bionicle, you know, people
mm
people that are cyborgs to a certain extent.
Mm.
But that, I think, is all part of a great utopia that, if we don't destroy ourselves until then, we'll hopefully achieve.
Yeah.
And it's
well
very possible, given that the doomsday clock has gone back
yeah
to 2.5 minutes to midnight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
So, on that bombshell.
Literally.
On that bombshell, literally.
I think we suffered a couple of leaps for the past 30 years, so.
Hmm?
We still managed to survive the apocalypse for the past 30 years. So
yeah, I know. So, yeah.
There's always one.
There's
always one.
It's one in 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. People need to sell doomsday things.
Mm.
You know, it is.
any final questions? We'll wrap up. So I know you've got sessions to get to. No? All right. Well, thank Miguel for really cracking through that. It's a good session. Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
Right. Thank you very much.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.